Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Achtung Millwall supports the Lions Food Hub, and all of our advertising revenues will be donated to support this fantastic initiative. It's now based at the Lions Centre on Bolina Road, and it's run by our own Kelly Webster. This is a friendly food bank supporting families in the Bermondsey and SE16 area. If you can help support the Lions Food Hub in any way, please visit at Lions Food Hub on Twitter or get in touch with us at Achtung Millwall. The Lions Food Hub. Come on, you Lions.
You're listening to Achtung Millwall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to I don't know if it's going to be a cathartic, a therapeutic, or a kind of a bit of psychotherapy edition of Achtung Millwall. We're doing a post-European Championship final edition. Joining me in this on the psychiatrist's couch is Mr. Michael Avery. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you for having me, Nick. It's coming home. We just didn't say when.
and remarkably lucid after a night of I don't know, indulgence. Is Mr. Harry Warren? How you doing, mate?
The head hurts, the heart aches. Welcome to supporting England, and Millwall.
I consoled my nephew. We were watching it with the family last night, and he's 13, so he's unused to. I think he's with a generation that starts to think that England belong in semi-finals and finals of major competitions. And I tried desperately to tell him this is like a really big event, but when you're 13, you don't absorb it. And of course, you know, he was expecting us to win it, and the poor little thing didn't know how to handle the sight of a penalty shootout disaster. And my story of 1972, Harry, when Millwall didn't get promoted after thinking we had been promoted, didn't really help him. I can't believe that wasn't helpful to him. But I said, you know, it gave me a lifetime of getting used to misery as normal.
Who does he support, Nick, anyway?
Yeah. Well, he follows Liverpool, but I kind of badger him with Millwall talk. So, you know, I'm trying to wear him down. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, I mean, I think it's not good for a child to get used to success because they start to think that it's normal. And you know, it's a rare event in your life. I'm just looking at the front pages, chaps. Daily Mirror, heartbreak, brave England lose on penalties, but they've done the nation proud, it says. Image of Bukayo Saka on the front page. Metro magazine, paper, everyone's probably seen that on the way into work today. Lions did us proud. Gareth Southgate hugging Saka there. And The Guardian says, so close after capturing the nation's imagination. Everyone will have seen the game last night. I think it's one of the few national occasions that we've had in recent times. And I think for that reason, it goes into what you've just just said there, Harry, about the heart, the head hurting and the heart aching, or that kind of idea. I was never convinced over the whole game that we didn't win it in 90 minutes, boys. I didn't think we were going to win it at all. How did you see the game last night, Michael? How was it for you, mate?
I thought we started well. Obviously, it goes without saying.
Yeah.
The goal was superbly taken. I think Trippier is a player who I would have put in. So I think he made the
right
decision
there. You would have picked
him, I'm a fan of Trippier, and I also think as well, for those who do listen or follow La Liga, for an Englishman or anyone really to go out to a club like Atletico Madrid, who are a big team in Spain, but they're not one of the traditional two, and being ever present or pretty much ever present in a time in a side that reclaims the title so well, you've got to always consider him for the starting 11. I thought he had a good game. Shaw obviously took the goal superbly well.
But I
do think after a while, you know, the Italians did show their experience. They showed their, they sort of showed their class, if you will. And I thought we defended superbly. I thought we really defended well. I know Maguire's got some stick prior to the tournament, and he started injured. But I really, really thought we defended well, and was quietly confident we'd do well. But then that door, the knocking on the door, was getting louder and louder and louder, and it was only really just a matter of time. The save from Pickford from the corner and the melee. Yeah. Was absolutely outstanding. Harry, you said before recording that it really should have, it could have been mentioned up there with Banks if they didn't score the rebound. And yeah, just when it got to penalties, it just, yeah, we sort of knew it was going to happen, didn't we? I'm not a massive fan of the sort of stuttered run up, and I think that sort of, when you're in that situation, just hit it, just smash it, do a Harry Maguire, put it in the top corner. But look, those lads out there, they're young, they're inexperienced to a degree. Especially
at this level, with this amount of pressure.
Yeah, with major finals. They have done absolutely superbly, every single one of them. And even the players who didn't play, I think it was it Cody who was mentioned, who was mentioned on social media that he's arguably been the player of the tournament for the support he's provided off the pitch, because he's been absolutely superb. Every player can hold their head up high. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. But sorry to keep rabbiting on, but I'll just finish with, it shows the difference, because I heard on the radio on the way home earlier on today, they said it's the muscle memory. Italians, Germans, Brazilians, they're used to playing in these finals. They're used to the pressure. And yeah, when it got to penalties, it did look like it was going to be them.
I mean, Harry, it's the big time. The pressure is immense. That's the nature of the beast. If you're going to play at the top table, you've got to get used to this. I mean, I was struck by a quote by Gareth Southgate after the game. He says, it's down to me. Nobody's on their own. It was my call, and it was totally down to me, which is laudable. You were quite vocal about criticising in Southgate. I mean, do you want to, you know, expand on that?
I think he's had a good tournament until this game. I think he's made two mistakes. He made a mistake against Scotland in the way that, not under, I think managers fail to understand crowds. And I think Millwall are a weird case in point, because I think, to link it to Millwall, and maybe even, I don't like mentioning West Ham, but, you know, you link it to working class support, maybe, you know, even Leeds when they get back into Elland Road, you know, that noise that does to lift players. That's why those teams are cup teams or knockout teams, because you get an atmosphere and you get the crowd on board. You have to start well. You know, how many teams come down the den and try and sit in and kill the game off for 20 minutes and get
it's
up on their back
tactics,
and turn it
around?
But in international football, you don't really get that. But he had that to play with against Scotland. It's a derby. Fucking use the crowd, you know. Against Italy last night, what was it? The Italians were outnumbered saying like 37-1, like at Waterloo or something. I don't know, but wrong country, but you get the
wrong
point.
Wrong battle. But anyway, we know what you mean.
Yeah, Agincourt. No, that's French again.
What's historical inaccuracy?
Move on, Harry.
I'm trying to make a point, but that's the point. But the fact is that he gets the penalties, regardless of the game. I think Michael's covered it quite well. I think tactically, Mason Mount was found out that he's not a right-sided winger. He changes from a back five to a back four, takes Trippier off, which is ridiculous, because Trippier was... Kyle Walker don't put crosses in. So that took that weapon away, which seemed to be working in the first half. Not that we had the ball. Rice looked tired, which, you know, I don't disagree with. Henderson was never fit, so I don't understand why he was taken. He looked so far off it when he come on and was subbed. You know, in key games, these substitutions matter. Your choices matter, and I think Bellingham's a very, very good football player. I do watch a little bit of La Liga. I am massively surprised that in a game that was opening up more and more, I know we were defensive, but you need pace. Sterling's been fantastic this tournament. I'm not his biggest fan. He's done things in key moments. Yes, he does offer very little at times. He popped up and scored the goals, so you can't take anything away from him. But last night he looked done, and he didn't have big managers make big decisions. You know, they take off players and they change games. Ferguson wins a Champions League final in the last 10 minutes with two substitutions. You know, plays, makes a tactical genius role to move someone. I can't remember who he moved into midfield and played there, but they done stuff. When you go to a penalty shootout, and Stuart Pearce, a man who knows everything about winning and losing penalty shootouts, in his book that came out before the tournament, discussed about penalties. And there's now, you know, with all the analysis that you do in football now, they've got a record of where every single penalty, every penalty taker would have been taking their penalties and putting their penalties. And when they played against the Germans in 1990 and 1996, they had penalty takers that had taken penalties for their clubs and been regular penalty takers. The first person to take a penalty in the 1996 England versus Germany penalty shootout that did not take a penalty regularly was Gareth Southgate. Gareth Southgate missed. Last night, the people that don't take penalties regularly for their club are Bukayo Saka, his first ever penalty in professional football, basically, and he misses the pressure penalty. And I think if he scores that, I think we win. I do think the momentum would have shifted because you've saved and scored, and then the pressure's right back on the next Italian taker, whoever that may have been.
The momentum was with England in the first half when we got at them, the early goal. I think they were rattled. We had all of the, most of it sitting on the bench, but we had all of the armoury to really unsettle an Italian side that was immensely experienced. I mean, I think also, just before we go on, you've got to take your hat off to Roberto Mancini and that Italian squad for achieving what they've achieved, because they didn't qualify for the 2018 World Cup. And they look like old hands that have been there and done it. And it's precisely the outcome that they would have, they get over the line. They'll do anything to win, even including tugs on shirts and stud challenges. It's
that career ending, possibly career ending.
It can be nasty, but that's Italian football and they win stuff. And I think when you compare, I think Gareth Southgate's a decent bloke. I think he has a bit of a Palace drip element about him, but he's a very decent man and nice bloke, and he's formed a very nice, secure little bubble for the England team. I think he does protect his players and all that kind of stuff. And so he's a very nice bloke, and everyone is like the national kind of uncle that you'd all want. In, you know, there's people on Twitter making fan fiction, erotic fan fiction about him as a kind of like a dream husband, you know.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, you're getting all sorts of, I mean, he's like this national kind of figure of reassuring niceness, you know.
Isn't that England in a nutshell, though? Failure, rewarding failure. It's failure.
But compare him, Harry. I mean, you know, it is, because what's he won? He's won nothing. And you look at Roberto Mancini.
They failed.
He's failed. And then you look at Roberto Mancini, you know, And you can take the piss out of the Italian style. There's one bloke looks like the caretaker out of Please Sir on the bench. But they win stuff. They win shit. They've got, I don't know how many World Cups. Is it four World Cups, Michael? They've won?
Four.
And now two European Championships, and they've come, you know, runners-up, which they won't be interested in. We are going to be saying, oh, well, we were runners-up. You know, I think it's that muscle memory thing, that point that you made, Michael, because it is important. Some teams win, the Germans are the same. You know, you can sing all the songs you like about the 10 German bombers, but they still go and win tournaments. They have four World Cups to their name too. There's a reason. And I think we saw that reason last night, Harry.
Well, they're technically, they've only been Germany since 1990. So, I mean...
West Germany, you know. I mean, the point remains the same. They win stuff. And there's a mentality that comes with that. There is an intolerance for coming second. I saw on Twitter today, and I've got no particular gripe against Gareth Southgate other than he played for Crystal Palace for a lengthy period. But they're talking about giving him a knighthood. I mean, what tosh is this, listeners?
I don't. The thing is with it is it's a very English psyche. I mean, regardless of the game, I suppose we'll come on to it, but the whole stringed them outside and so on, all that. Very English clutching of pearls in certain sections of Twitter and the media today is all comes together, you know, like, oh, we've got it's almost like an English, we're like making the perfect Hollywood blockbuster. It wins no Oscars. It wins because there's no creative intent there. It's just copying what someone's done before, you know. It's just that, oh, it's a chick flick. We only repeat the same thing, you know. It's the same love story told in a million different ways, because we do the same things all the time.
Well, we do.
And I expect a different result. The clutching of pearls of course they're going to go on the lash all day. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff. Of course, you know, the manager's not very good because as a country for years, we've not been very good. You know, it's...
Well, we tolerate second best. But I mean, Michael, I mean, that for me, and I don't know that you boys feel about this, but or what the listeners feel about this, but the moment the game was won for Italy was in the 90-something minute when Chiellini tugged on Saka's shirt and pulled him back. That won it. That was the moment, because there was a break. The boy was going to kill him for pace, probably score, and the game's gone. And so he did what was required, what was necessary. You might not like it. It's the darkest of dark arts. It's Dennis Wise maxed out 10 times over, the best practitioner I've ever seen of the dark arts. He did what he was required to do. That was the moment the game was lost. We don't approach it in the same way. And maybe we...
No, but even if we did, because we're English, our media would attack that player, even though we've done the right thing to do. It's a very weird sort of, we must be seeing, it's almost like the sort of 18th century when they used to agree to have a duel to the death over some form of slight insult. I'll take your grass before breakfast and all this bollocks, right? And it seems to still be ingrained. I don't know whether it's an FA thing or, you know, you look at it. And the thing that fucks me off with it is that the FA will turn this into some kind of hold this up as some kind of flag bearing for the work that they're doing, as if that what they're doing in grassroots football and leading up and the women's game and all that, all this is working, but it's not. You know, the fact is that this country is massively underfunded in terms of pitches, massively underfunded in terms of referees, facilities, you know, all this kind of stuff. And you get to a final and it papers over the cracks, and it's basically like putting a wall up that's fucked and you keep filling it with polyfill, right? And eventually that wall, if any pressure goes on it, is going to collapse. And we get to a point in every tournament where we have pressure put on us. And okay, it come later in this tournament. They had pressure against Denmark, but they got over the line. Well done. We got a penalty and we scored the penalty just. And we got over the line and we had Sweet Carolina thing. But it was almost like I got a very, almost, I don't know, maybe this is with the benefit of hindsight, but it did feel very Millwall at Old Trafford, you know, the Sunderland 1-0 win. You knew that was our final. Do you know what I mean? It was a very... I mean, they were there to be beaten last night, Italy. I don't think they're a million miles
better than us. They should
have
been beaten. I mean, Michael, there was a great quote, Merv Payne. I've picked up Merv's quote. He says, Southgate was given an Aston Martin for the Euros in terms of attacking quality, but with the exception of the quarters, he refused to take it out, his Aston Martin out of second gear. Eventually, he's come up against Mancini driving his Ferrari, who's happy to put his foot down. I think that's the difference, because we England, for some reason, has never dealt with talent particularly well. I mean, I'm thinking of Jack Grealish and maybe some of the boys, the Sancho, and was it Bellingham you mentioned earlier on, Harry, all sat on the bench. There's an array of attacking talent there, not used.
Yeah, you're right, but... And I get that because games, especially in the group stages, like the Scotland games and certainly the Croatia game as well, you're crying out for players of that stature up front. You've got Jadon Sancho, who, as far as alleged reports are going, he's going to go to Manchester United for £78 million. He's like the only attacker. Isn't there a stat like he was the only attacker in the Bundesliga to have double figure goals and double figure assists?
Did he Ukraine he played it? They're on the pier.
Bellingham barely got a sniff. And Grealish is obviously the argument with Grealish, which I think he unfortunately showed how good he was as an impact sub. So he hindered himself straight away. I do get Merv's point entirely. Absolutely entirely get that. And I think last night showed that, because we was up. Let's be brutally honest. You say they were there for the taking, the Italians. But they were like an absolute juggernaut in the second half. They just did not stop.
They turned it on.
They made a tactical change and you don't react to it. You know, it's the definition of insanity. If you do the same thing over and over again, you'll get the same result over and over again. You needed to. He's a bit tactically
naive. But my argument in the defence of Gareth Southgate is, if you are under that amount of pressure, and I mean, I watched, I watched the highlights again this morning. You know, I'm a sucker for punishment. But if you're under that much attacking bombardment for like 20, 30 minute periods, you're not going to think, oh, here's what I'll do. I'll take off Harry Maguire and chuck on Bellingham. I'll take off Walker and chuck on someone.
You might have brought someone like a Grealish in that can keep the ball further up the pitch buy yourself 15-20 seconds of respite.
And I don't necessarily agree with the Henderson substitution. And I do think as much as the penalty takers was probably the wrong decision. I mean, Southgate coming out and saying that he chose the penalty takers himself. The substitutions were wrong. I think by the 90th minute, hadn't Italy made something like five subs and we'd made two?
Their use of substitutions was a lot better. I think Mancini knew his side better. He'd used every single player, I think, on his bench in the competition. We hadn't done that. I think the Italians were so confident, weren't they, already through by their third game? So he basically changed the entire 11 for the third game.
Something like that.
The story was being written, you know, while we were, you know, struggling against Scotland and then having to beat the Czechs to go through to avoid other clubs, which shows where our mental psyche at is as a nation. We need to avoid the big boys. Well, technically, we probably are one of the big boys. We just have a history of underperforming. We are the Spurs of international football. But you know,
we've got too much talent to be the Millwall of international.
Yeah, we do. But we're now the Millwall of Twitter, aren't we? We're now very much hated.
We'll come on to that.
Can I just make one point about the game? So, yeah, I agree with you, Mike. I think it's very difficult. But when you get to the 90th minute and you've got three subs left or four subs, whatever he had left, And you're sitting there and you're 90 minutes into a game, you know you've got an extra time of 30 minutes and you know that, you know, you could get the, change what we're doing. It's 1-1 now. It's a new game. It's a 30-minute game until penalties, right? You've got 30 minutes to go at it. You know our history is not very good in penalties and you know some of them boys are going to be tired out there. How did Mason Mount get 100 minutes of football doing fuck all before we bring Grealish on? And I know what you're saying. And also, I think last night we missed Phil Foden. I really don't think Saka would have been on the pitch if it had been Phil Foden had been fit. I think we saw in the Denmark game that when Phil Foden come on, the amount of I didn't realise really, if I'm being honest, how quick he is in terms of his running. And I think that would have made the difference. But it's you need luck to win finals. And,
you do.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Achtung, Mehlball.
I just want to praise Gareth. I haven't damned him. I want to praise him because, I mean, Michael, you've got young kids. I can tell you and the listeners, my nephew and his mates were captivated by the whole tournament, really, especially building to the crescendo of last night. I mean, this England team, and I'm always a bit wary of this, but and I don't know how your kids found it, Michael, but they seem to be held up as representative of the nation. It's like they're a football team, a very good football team, in my opinion, but there's a kind of a national need for them to be held up as something representative of something bigger. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like they represent a kind of a New England almost, you know. Your kids at school, I mean, would you say the same, the tournament's had them in its grip over the 3-4 weeks, Michael?
Yeah. My eldest, bless his heart, he was distraught last night. Absolutely distraught. My middle child isn't a football fan. Yeah. I'll be brutally honest. I've tried everything. super glued his eyes open, super glued him to his seat in block three. He
too much Millwall. You've given him too many Millwall games.
But he's been sat in front of the TV, you know, like my nephews loves it. My niece, they're into it as well. All my family owners, the young kids, the schools. You can see the schools. There's videos everywhere.
I think the thing is that it's
not difficult is the wrong word, but I think you need to sort of compare the national sides to countries that, with all due respect, aren't as sort of well off as we are in the UK, in the sense that some countries, they see their national sides as like ways out of poverty and ways to better lives. But they are idolised. I don't think, obviously, to our degree, because of our way of life here, it's like seen as an escape. But let's be brutally honest. Harry, we had a discussion yesterday. You were saying that Millwall means more to you than the England team, even though you think highly of the England team. I genuinely think it's on par, as much as I love Millwall, because I've never felt this way before about a national tournament. Nick, I could be wrong here, but as much as you do reminisce about the previous seasons of Millwall and the 70s and the year that nearly was when we should have got promoted, and then Millwall got promoted in the 80s, but you speak in the group chat sort of more reminiscent and fondly, it seems, about that 66 Cup final win, even though you was only young.
I don't remember it.
But there's just something about international football that just catches people more than the club level. I think it could be that, you know, these are, like, to a point, even if we personally don't think they are, these are the elite countrymen who have been handpicked to represent you in major tournaments.
I mean, there's this idea that if kids see themselves on telly, in films, in sports teams, or whatever it might be, that somehow that inspires them to progress. And there must be something in that way, I'm imagining. But then the England team, for me, has been, you know, since Viv Anderson first appeared in the 70s, first black player to play for England. I mean, the England team has not been monolithically, you know, English, white, or whatever choice of words you want on that. We've been mixed for some time, but for some reason, this particular team, I suppose because it's young, has become seen as representative of the youth of the nation in a way. I mean, you're a bit too old for all this kind of talk, really, I suppose, mate, aren't you? You're outside the youth range now.
Yeah, I've now gone, you go into that, if you get older, you go further away.
You're approaching middle age.
Yeah, you go further away from that thing. I mean, when we started doing the pod, I would have been in that, but maybe I'm a grizzled old bastard now. No, I get what you're saying. I think it's just because they've embraced sort of the YouTube generation and the team puts up TikToks and all this kind of stuff, and they seem to have... You have more access to them than what you probably did under previous England managers like Hodgson and Capello. So that's whatever that cycle of years was, maybe 10 years of that. You're sort of going back to an affinity with the side of Venables or maybe Bobby Robson.
Yeah, maybe the 96 team would seem, yeah. I mean, from again...
Again, they picked Hoddle after that and destroyed all the good work they'd done. So, yeah, I know people call him for... Some people don't like Southgate and want Southgate to go. I'm sort of a bit... He's a bit beige to me. He doesn't really offend me that much anymore. I've just accepted that he's negative and that's what it is. But there's some people who like to play football. I'm personally one of these people that I'd rather us lose 5-4 than lose on penalties. You know, I'd rather have that, you know, the swing of emotions like that. You get beat, but you can get beat in different ways. And that's how I feel about it. But I think that to go back to the point, they represent the country in a different world because they are not all the players are from the best clubs, which is unusual again. There doesn't seem to be a clique. There doesn't seem to be a big sort of United clique or a Liverpool clique or a Chelsea clique or a City clique. They do seem to genuinely get on with each other.
I think that's a major difference. I mean, I was thinking back, I'm seeing Frank Lampard on the panel last night. And that England team, there was him and Gerrard and the kind of Liverpool, Manchester United cliques and all that kind of thing, which really did hold back the potential of what should have been a side that did much, much better than what it actually did. I mean, you don't seem to get that in this England. My point being to try and praise what Southgate has put together here, because it is a fact that we were semi-finalists in the World Cup and now runners-up in the European Championships. And that should not be accepted, but it's equally It's a stage, it's a milepost, Harry, on the motorway towards success.
As long as you learn from it. I mean,
yeah.
The problem is the FA will reward this with a 5-year deal, which isn't what you should do. It should be reviewed every after, you know, tournaments normally pre-COVID.
He's not confirmed he's going to stay after, or he's put in. I think I saw on Sky earlier on. He's not overly commit to after Dubai. I mean, he might do.
Unless Southgate gets the deal of the century from someone out there, and I'd be wary of him as my club manager because he ain't won nothing. I mean, unless he gets deal of the century, I would...
He looks very much like now Donna's the next Spurs boss after the Spurs boss has just taken a job as foul, didn't he? That's a Levy money spinner right there. Sorry to dig at Spurs fans again. Going back to what you said, Michael, about the Millwall-England thing, I feel I should answer that because I'll be getting... I mean, that depends on your point of view. I know this is a Millwall podcast, but the difference is because we've never really had any Millwall-England players... And as a kid, I suppose, growing up, you go, your memories are, your Millwall is my family. I know that sounds really silly, but they are my family, as dysfunctional as we fucking are. You know, I went with my granddad, I go with my dad, I went with my uncle before they passed. You know, I've gone with my brother, my cousin. They are a shared experience that isn't shared between everyone. It's shared between a select, maybe 15 up to 50,000 when we do well, family that are all the same as you. And with England, I do at times feel they represent me. You know, I probably feel more represented after we've been defeated in a final, because I've seen our Twitters exploded into poo-pooing the achievements of the side and the split opinions and people calling each other cunts. That feels very Millwall. That kind of feels like what I know football to be. Whereas, you know, I was making the point that would I feel, you know, last night I didn't get overly emotional at the end. I don't know why, because I feel like it was a death by a thousand cuts after the early goal. Kind of the Millwall in you in the back of your head went, it's a 1-0 lead, we've scored too early, I've now got to wait 87 minutes before I can enjoy.
You kind of knew it was only ever going to finish. If it got to penalties, I thought we're done for.
Whereas a Millwall championship player as a 31-year-old and never remembering Millwall in the top flight, a Millwall playoff final defeat in the championship playoff final would finish me off. There's no doubt about it. I'd be a blubbering wreck, and I really can't pretend that I'd be anything else and, you know, get the Samaritans on standby because I'd be that distraught. But it's, I don't know whether that's because it's all the time. It's a constant. I just felt very much last night. And after this, I'm desperate to get back to normal football. And I don't know whether or not that is the role of the England team, is to make you love your club more. And then you end up loving England more.
Achtung, Millwall.
Let's talk about the drink and drug fueled frenzied scenes that I've written on my list of things to talk about here, boys. I mean, I could have told you from the very start of the day, that was going to turn into a monster session yesterday. There were blokes posting out there on it at 9:30 in the morning, and you think, I don't know, the idea of that.
Well, they were late starting, weren't they?
I mean, I'll be dead by about 8 o'clock at night by the time the kickoff comes along. And as for going to the box park in Croydon or some other little hellhole or Leicester Square like that, you know, I'd run a mile. Each to their own in this life, but it don't look all that pretty, does it? I mean, the other thing I want to say is that there was a great point made by, I think her name is Jennifer, one of the Twitter people that I follow, talking about UEFA charging thousands and thousands for tickets for the final, and then being a standard when people bust in and try and get in for nothing, possibly. None of this is attractive, but it does feel rather Millwall, Harry, doesn't it? This is the stringdom does that attaches themselves to our club, don't do us a favour, but it comes as part and parcel of the event. Sadly, I don't know if there's any explanation more than that. Well, really,
it's a festival. It becomes a festival. You go to festivals. I mean, I'm sure people older than me will remember when Glastonbury was like,
people off their heads.
You know, people off their heads. And also, you know, the scenes of people inside Wembley fighting people who are jibbing into Wembley is a very Millwall, you mentioned it off air earlier, it's a very Millwall Wigan 2013 kind of day.
I was reminded of that. I don't know what the FA is going to do this time. They haven't got Millwall involved, so they've got to blame themselves for their lack of security.
I made a tweet as I saw these things yesterday about, you know, I can't believe they haven't asked for Lurch and the Millwall security team to turn up, because we've dealt with this all before. Maybe they should have had Millwall in last week. Maybe all of Millwall season ticket holders should have been given a ticket.
Can you imagine that? That would have gone bent, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, because obviously we're like, as I think you said, after when we run on a pitch after the Bradford win, you turned around and said we're like the soft testers, you know, but back in Vegas when they open their hotel, they have a soft opening. Millwall are the soft opening of testing security measures. And obviously, because we haven't been there for a few seasons, they've obviously forgotten what they need to do. So it did feel very Millwall. It was very sort of like Sex Pistols crashed with Millwall and anarchy outside. But let's not get it right. I think they massively fucked up. I think there was
the FA was, fucked up big time.
Well, not just the FA. I mean, you do have to have a look at our fantastic London mayor, who decided that he was going to have a fan park in Leicester Square ticketed for like 1,200 people, which is fine if you're playing, you know, the Czech Republic in a group game, but it's not fine if you're playing fucking Italy in a final for the first time in 55 years. You know, there is this thing called the internet. There is this thing about, you know, we've done so much stuff over the last 18 months of changing the way we do life and technology in terms of apps and tracking and ordering. But, you know, everyone's used to, oh, I'll have a beer. I'll order it to my table. And the advice has always been to be outside, you know, avoid large gatherings of people, apart from when I'm going to shepherd you all into this square that's unpleased.
You can tell Harry uses Wetherspoons a lot, listeners, can't you?
I don't use spoons. I prefer to use a vintage gin or an ember in. I'd rather pay more money to avoid the strings. But you know what I mean.
What you mean.
We've all been there. But it's the fact of the matter is that the thing that does me in the most is that literally Hyde Park, Green Park, big screen, tables of how many people you want on a table, because those are the rules outside. You can have tables of 30. You know, these are all the government's own rules. And you gave these people nowhere to go and congregate other than the place where everyone with tickets was going to go and congregate. And you seem
it was the first event. I mean, you said it earlier on, Harry. I mean, my first thing where people have had the chance to get out, have a drink, potentially enjoy, hopefully, a good time or collectively suffer misery together. Since what was it? When did it always begin? It was March 2020, wasn't it?
The lockdown began. March.
You know, I think you and I could have sat down and advised the authorities that it might kick off certain hotspots like Leicester Square, like on the Jubilee line,
Baker Street, Wembley.
Was it? No, it's Olympic Way, not Wembley Way. Baker Street. You know, you could have picked them out, couldn't you? I mean, it doesn't take.
It's a tube map.
A genius. A tube map with nearest pubs. You know,
Green Park, the Green Man. You know,
I mean, don't look attractive. I mean, you know, there's a posted bloke called Steve Hannigan. He's not Millwall. He's a Tranmere, I think. But he says F2FA, a disgraceful lack of organisation at Wembley last night. I saw hundreds of ticketless fans gain entry through the disabled gate. Thousands of genuine fans with tickets were crammed in the area in front of the turnstile for 90 plus minutes. I mean, it would fuck you off big time to have paid big and then you can't get in because other people have busted in front of you, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have done. But, you know, these people are professional. You know, a lot of the people last night who were there seems to be, you know, I saw people had been to Wimbledon for the day, you know, your celebs, and then they trot over to Wembley. If you're pissed off, overly pissed off, and you're saying it's disgraceful scenes, maybe Wimbledon, you know, the champagne and the strawberries and the clotted cream, maybe that's where you belong. Let us do the, you know, let the people who go and have a pie and a pint turn up at Wembley. Yes, it's not a great look, but come on, stop clutching your pearls. You know, the jibbing in, right? We've all seen people jib into football, and I don't go up to that person who's jibbed in and punch them. And they, you know, I mean, it's fuck all to do with me. The security functions of Wembley are for the security, the shocking support.
I mean, look after me heart, listeners. Well, I can't get involved in all that, you know.
Maybe before the operation, Nick, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. Let's be honest, right? Wembley has always been a bit shit at security. Wembley has always
been
a shit place. Brilliant. I mean, fucking what? The White Horse final 100 years ago. Fucking, I mean, it's been shit since then and they've knocked it down and rebuilt it again. It's not a great stadium. it leads, there is fuck all around it, by the way, as well, like in terms of there's no staging post. It's at the end. It just is a very, very difficult place to go. And
it's a very poor, I don't like it. I'd never enjoy any of our trips up there with the Lions. If you said to me we'd never have to go there again, we'd play somewhere else, I'd be quite happy with that, to be absolutely honest. I know that's...
Yeah. I think the thing is as well, Jack, with the tickets, it's like we said it before recording again. We know how much football's changed over the years, you know, how it's changed, who it's for and all this, and how it used to be for the working man. But as I said, there's a chap I worked with, and he told me a story of during the group stage, someone was offering like £800 for the cheapest ticket to a major final. Yes, it's a major final. £800 is the madness, cheapest ticket. Madness. And then you know, we said it as well, but how many of these, like, you know, you've got like this new rule. I'm not sure, and I'm not going to get into the politics of vaccine passports and apps and all this stuff with people, because people want to get the vaccine, they can't, they don't have to if they don't want to. But my goodness, there's a lot of people who have probably rushed to the front of the queue for their double vaccine celeb-wise, aren't there, who managed to get in, because...
Tom Cruise was there last night. Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, where was he? Was he at Albania away a few years ago?
Was he at Bulgaria away when they all got racially abused by the black shirts? Was he there?
He used to be on the halfway line. I don't think you boys realise he was a big face on the halfway line.
Wasn't the bloke who used to dress up as a lion?
that's the thing. I remember seeing Tom Cruise at Colchester away in the Johnston Paints a few years ago, but I haven't seen him at any England games for a while.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Football ended in heartbreak, dear listeners, but we do have at least a consolation that the Lions won their first trip up in, was it Motherwell? We beat Motherwell 2-0 wearing our training kit because we haven't got our proper kit. So Millwall's coming back, dear listeners, so, you know, a few more weeks.
The professionally run Millwall security team, club shop, transfer scouts, they're all sitting there now. Thinking, oh, we've got away with one, lads. Don't worry about it. No one will notice that we haven't got a kit. We're playing our training kit. Everyone's busy watching England.
We'll all be back to normal very, very, very soon. This madness will be ended.
Just quickly, what's just literally just occurred to me? Why didn't we wear last season's kit?
Don't know.
If our shirts this season ain't ready, why ain't we wearing last year's one?
Because that would be too simple. No one pack him up.
Old spare kit. We must have stacks of stuff we could put. Anyway, I don't know. It's a good point. Who knows? Why don't we just put the shirts on that we wore last season?
I mean, that seems so... by God, it's so simple. It's like the line in Blackadder, isn't it? When Blackadder goes forth, when they're talking about, is it the same plan to have thousands of men aimlessly slaughtered for 100 yards of ground? No, it's not like the last time. It's a completely different plan. It's the same. That's why it's brilliant. You know,
Gary Rowett is sitting on the bench with pants on his head and pencils up his nose.
Going wibble.
There's an image. Thank you very much, chaps. I hope this has been cathartic for you both to unburden yourselves after last night's heartbreak. Back to normality in 3 weeks' time, Harry.
It will be. It'll be really good. The next tournament, ladies and gentlemen, if you have forgotten, will be hosted around Christmas. So not only can England fuck up your summers, they now can fuck up your Christmases as well.
There we are. Big thank you to Michael Avery. Thanks for joining us, Michael, from work.
No problem.
Thank you to Harry, ahead of work.
Yes, ahead of work. This is going to be hard, isn't it?
And I shall try and get this edited later on this afternoon. We'll see. Thank you for listening, dear listeners. This is an emergency edition of Acton Millwall. We appreciate your custom. Arrivederci, Millwall. Do I still say that? It's an Italian phrase. Maybe not.
Oh, maybe drop that. Maybe say bye for now.
Bye for now.
Au revoir.
Thank you for listening to Acton Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci, Millwall. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?